Jeg traff Elixir på Metal Merchants I 2011. Intervjuet ble publisert på Eternal Terror, men aldri sendt. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, det her Jernverket. Men du, før intervjuet noe jeg må si. Det ikke gratis å lage Jernverket, så hvis du vil støtte produksjonen av programmet, så det helt genialt hvis du vil donere et par slanter. Det går an å trekke et fast beløp hver måned via patreon.com/jernverket, eller gi en enkeltsum via VIPS-nummer 567438. Informasjon og lenkene står I episodebeskrivelser, og beløpet selvsagt valgfritt. Bidraget går rett til Jernverket. Tusen takk for alt som kommet inn hittil. Jeg takknemlig for hver eneste kron.
Okay, Paul Taylor, singer with Elixir.
Norman Gordon, guitarist.
Phil Denton, guitarist.
I'm Nigel, the best looking one in the band, and I play the drums.
Kevin Dobbs, bass.
Yeah.
There's a moment of them.
All right, I'm here together with Elixir at the Metal Merchants Festival. And you were playing here yesterday. How did it go?
I thought it went fantastic. Great crowd. Once we got the sound sorted out, it was fantastic. We're in business, and the crowd lifted us, and we had a great gig.
Yeah. Standing in the front line myself.
Yeah, you were down in the front. There, yeah.
Having fun.
Yeah, the crowd were great. Good crowd.
Could you just start by telling us the formation of about the formation of Elixir in 1983? That's correct.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
The two brothers, Kevin and Nigel.
Yeah.
We sort of formed the band, me and my brother, with another guitarist who's a friend of ours called Steve, and then we was looking for another guitarist, so we put out a few ads and.
Looking for a good one.
Yeah, I was looking for a good one then, but along came Phil. So we started writing material with the other guitarist, but eventually he decided to call it a day. So it was just the three of us, and then we looked for a singer, and then Paul came along, and then eventually to find one more guitarist in the band, so another few ads went out, and we found Norman. So and that was the lineup then. So
we did have a female singer for a while.
Oh yeah, well.
Yeah, I saw
keep forgetting
that.
About that.
Yeah, because there was Steve and the two Dobbs brothers, and then me, and then we looked for a singer, had a girl called Sally, and we did one demo tape with that lineup. But we played that demo tape to Neil Kay, who was the DJ at the local place where we used to play. And he liked Sally, and he said he was putting together a girl band in America, which he'd like to join, so she went off to do that. And so he was without a singer again, but then we got Paul. A year later.
But what do you think about girl singers in metal bands? Because you went over to a guy, from a girl to a guy.
Yeah.
What's the story behind
it? It has to do with tuning, I think. Sally
was more in tune.
I think if they can sing, if they can do the business, why not? You know, if they can step up to the mark and, you know, belt it out. Why not?
Not opera, but more heavy metal.
Definitely.
Crystal
yeah.
Viper, and they've got a fantastic singer. Martha's a fantastic vocalist.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day when we were around, it was Warlock with a flying the flag with, you know, really. Mm-hmm. Doro was a female singer. We wouldn't have minded being in a band like Warlock. Like, you know, that was our style of music, so yeah. Doro was okay with him.
Yeah.
But you're having an anniversary these days for the Son of Odin album.
Yeah.
25 years ago.
We can't believe it.
We look so young.
We was only five at the time.
You're still very good looking. Could you tell us about the Son of Odin album? It's that's kind of a legendary album in the heavy metal.
We can't remember now.
I'll tell you one thing that happened about it. It's not often known. The first day there, I caught my finger in the door. That one. The third one in. And I had to do all the rhythm with three fingers instead of four.
And do all the lead solos in the last day or two.
Yeah, and it was agony. I did all the leads and it was an agony.
That's Django Reinhardt style.
Yeah. It was a big, massive blood vessel blister came up, hardened, and I got this stuff from the chemist, just spraying all whipped around and hoarded up and everything. And I was just.
Still, it sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, that first solo on the first track, Starbush on, is like.
The first time I ever went in the studio proper to record an album, that happened. But hey,
and
we got through it.
As usual, the musicians take so long. I think I've got about three quarters of a day to record all the vocals. I don't think it's much more than that.
We wouldn't let him do anymore.
We knocked it all out in 4 or 5 days, didn't we?
We was there 9 days because
the mixing was 4 days or something.
We had a week off work because we worked, and we went down on the Friday night, so we had Saturday, Sunday, the week in between, then Saturday and Sunday, and came home Sunday. We got the 9 tracks all sort of finished by mixed by the Sunday lunchtime, so we had a couple of hours left, so we quickly did Chariot of the Gods, an instrumental one, which we sort of kept as a 10th track for a B-side of a single or something, which we never got to release. So that song came to light when Son of Odin came out on CD. They asked if we had any extra tracks, and we said, yeah, Chariot of the Gods. So
that's instrumental,
yeah. But that was just done quickly, and then after doing a bash through that, Norman put another solo on in great pain and mixed it quick, and that was it, all done.
Do you think albums get better when they are played in a few days? Because now bands often use over a year and take a long time, perfectionism. Is it more a kind of nerve in the albums that are just...
I think if you can get it down within the first couple of takes, when it still feels fresh and you're still excited... Because it gets to the point, especially with lead breaks, you can't keep it up. The stamina, you start getting tired, and you can't do it the same. So if you can get it knocked, laid down the first couple of takes, I think it captures the energy more. The longer you try and perfect it, I think it loses a little bit of something.
But against that, I mean, there's plenty of things in the Son of Odin album that we'd like to have gone back and re-recorded and touched up and made a little bit better. And we just didn't have the time to do it.
Or the money.
Or the money, yeah, exactly.
Couldn't afford to be in the studio for months, you know, or years. Yeah. You know,
what would you like to change, then?
It's the same with album, except for our new latest one, that you record an album and you get it mixed in the studio and you come away with the tape and you play the tape at home a week later and you think, that bit was a bit... I could have done that lead a bit better, or...
More down to mixing than anything, and send away to a proper mastering suite to get it mastered.
Yeah, maybe the vocals are too loud or the guitar solo is too quiet on a certain place. Just silly little things like that. Whereas the new album we did ourselves, so we could spend months mixing it.
So the old Hallows Eve is the perfect album, in your opinion?
Well, in mine, yeah.
I would have liked to have recorded Midnight Messiah again. I don't think
that's weird. Yeah, Midnight Messiah was just the first song that album that we wrote, and we already played it live a couple of times, and we knew that song better than all the others. Some of the others were new, but when we come to record it, I don't know, it just seemed the hardest one to do.
I don't know what it is. Feel on it for some reason, but I mean, it's not bad, but I would like to give that a bit.
It was different problems on it. It's just we didn't have a proper studio, we had to make do with a rehearsal place, and even the guitars were different this time. We didn't really it's more through the desk stuff as opposed to
doing the vocals
in
Phil's back garden is never great.
Yeah, it's just that we sort of tick along where we hire a studio, spend a couple of £1,000 on recording, get a record deal to release it or whatever, and then we've got the money to record the next one. But Majestic Rock released their album in 2006, Mind Creeper, and they went bust, couldn't pay us any money, so we paid out for a studio and the recordings. We didn't have any money, we didn't have any option really but to record ourselves or wait years till we've got the money to do a new album. So
couldn't take a risk.
I bought a multi-track desk and just recorded ourselves at our rehearsal room, some of it, and some of it back home at my place. But I liked doing that myself.
It gives us
more time to experiment.
You heard the new album?
I've heard parts of it. I haven't bought it yet, so I haven't heard it in a whole.
Right.
I have to admit that. But when you started out, you were playing for a few years. But what happened? I read about this Friday, 13th in February 1987, that this was a special disastrous day. Why was this?
Why? It's a long list.
Everything went wrong.
Yeah, it was Bournemouth. We were playing in Bournemouth.
I got locked off stage. I went up.
No, before that, we left Nigel.
We got left the service station. Now we're going the motorway. So we had two cars. We were going up, and we were passing each other. And one was going like, you know, "Where's Nigel?" Mouthing it in the car.
He's
and
we
said, "Yeah, he's with you." He said, "No, he's with you." And we'd left him and the drum roadie. We found him walking up the hard shoulder of the motorway.
Yeah, that's an accident of Nigel. But Kev couldn't travel with us because you had to work. Kev couldn't get the day off work. They wouldn't let him have it, so he had to just come down the train after.
It was really late, yeah.
And then during
the gig, I wanted to go to the toilet.
And a big drum solo.
Didn't have much time to do anything.
Yeah, the radio.
Get straight on stage. So I said to Nigel, "Do a longer drum solo." So I've gone out upstairs, because I was on the wirelesses, come down.
Still playing his bass.
The door shut. Bass player's not on stage, it's only our manager.
He's still playing. He still came in on.
I came in behind
a locked door.
That wasn't the one with the dodgy keyboard.
I think it was a dodgy keyboard.
Because we were
going to do the Son of Odin intro, which is just like two notes on a keyboard. And of course,
no, it was a new Visions of Darkness.
Or whatever it was. It was just like one or two notes or a chord.
We had this new keyboard, and we said to Paul, "Look, push this.
Just press that button and go." So all the lights went out. So I pressed the button, and it started off the automatic drum machine.
As this bossa nova comes out over the piano, it was
like. So it wasn't great.
I forgot about that.
And I couldn't see to turn it off either.
Sounds like an American sitcom.
It was just one of them days that everything sort of went wrong.
But is this why you quit touring when you gave out the Lethal Potion in 1990? This disastrous day?
No.
By that time, it got to the fact where we couldn't get any decent audiences because people weren't going out to do listen to gigs anymore.
It's grunge had all come in, and I think it was when me and you left at the lineup, and I just said to Paul one night, I think we might just call it a day, while there's still got a bit of respectability about the name, and that was up. We decided to call it a day one night after one gig. It didn't happen. That was another day of the massive hurricane and everything.
Yeah, we were plagued with disasters. We had one gig at the Astoria that our drummer couldn't make. Stevie couldn't make it or something. So we asked Nigel to come back and do that for us, which he did. Which went okay, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But we tried to get it back, but it wasn't working. I mean, Elixir works as a five-piece band with this five-piece. If it's not us five doing it, it doesn't seem to work properly. So that's why we've been so happy playing together for the last 10 years, because we've been the original unit, playing the original material.
Because you're one of the very, very few bands that have still the original lineup after the comeback. Was this Norman's birthday?
It's my 40th birthday.
It's the first time we've met up for a while, isn't it?
And word got out to the guys. I was having like a party and a few bands playing and that, and the guys all showed up and said, "Do you fancy getting up to do Treachery?" I said, "Can you remember it still? I haven't seen some of you guys for years." And then, yeah. We'll get up. And they were all happy to get up, and we got up, and we just rolled it out.
It sounded good.
And then afterwards, I was chatting to Kev, and I was talking to Phil. I said, "Do you realise we've got an album's worth of material sitting around? We've never recorded properly."
Yeah, I realised, because in the afternoon Norm said about playing Treachery, and I hadn't played it for years.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a record player, so I couldn't play this Treachery single.
That's
for
us.
I don't know, I'm just a journalist. Sorry. But I think there are some forks two stairs down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, when Norman said we were playing Treachery, and I thought, I haven't played it for years, and I couldn't play the single on the record player because I didn't have a record player, so I had to find a tape of Treachery to learn it that afternoon. And I found this old live tape from Dunstable that we recorded in 1985, and as I played through it, there's all these songs that kept coming out. I thought, I remember that. We had, you know, we'd never released it properly.
Yeah, so he said about if you're interested, do you fancy recording all this stuff?
Just so we've got a proper recording of it, not to release it, but just
posterity, really. So
yeah, just for old time's sake, really. Just go back and record.
They said
songs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then, this was the new album you made?
The Idol. It ended up being the Idol album. Yeah. And sheer coincidence,
But first of all, Manos, the cult metal classics label in Greece, contacted me through the internet about a week or so after Norman's birthday.
Just after that?
And just said, we want to release The Son of Odin on CD.
Reissue?
Yeah, because it'd never come out on CD. It's only been on vinyl before. And he said, are you interested? And first of all, I said, I don't think anyone wants to hear that. It's 15 years old. No one knows that. And he said, yeah, it's become a cult album in Greece and you can't get it because it's on vinyl. So I said, okay, why not? So he did 1,000 copies and sold out in a month. And then he said, would you guys get back together and come and play his festival, Heavy Metal Assault Festival in Athens? So we went, okay, we'll just do it and see how it goes.
Yeah, we thought we'd be the first band on them. They played for about half an hour, and the next thing they said, oh, your headline it. Oh, shit! Yeah. We better get our ass in the gear and do some practice.
We did a warm-up gig in London first in a pub, and that went okay. And then when we got to Athens, everything was running really late. We got on about 1 in the morning, and all the lights down. I thought, how's this going to go? Because the band on before, Sacred Steel, they went down pretty well. So I went,
skinhead.
He was a bit worried.
And, German guys.
The intro music finished and that. We ripped into songs and we did The Idol first, so they didn't know too much. But as soon as we started up with Trial by Fire, the second song, which was from Son of Odin album, everyone's like this big massive roar come at us and they were singing all the words and chanting along all the riffs, and it just was taken back because
we had no idea anybody knew about it really over there.
Yeah.
So you'd really have a 10-year sleep and then you came back by accident almost. And
almost by accident.
And then everyone were just like chanting your Son of Odin album.
And singing all the words, and like we played about 2.5 hours that night. They would just kept saying more and more, and we kept played everything that we had, you know, and got out about 3:30 in the morning. It was great. And from that, some guy saw the video, I think, and put us on, asked us to play Keep It True. And for Keep It True, we did Headbangers Open Air and Heavy Metal Maniacs in Holland. And it's just carried on from there. So we just sort of said, we'd just do this one gig and have fun, and that's it. But it's just kept on being fun, really. So then Cult Metal Classics said, have you got any old material? And we remembered, as I was saying, on that tape I found, Norman's birthday, all these old songs. So we recorded the old songs first, like relearned them, and recorded that and released that. But then we said it'd be a proper reformation once we write new songs and do a new album. So we did, that was Mindcreeper in 2006, was whole new songs. And then now we've got to do All Hallows Eve. So
your success just have continued after this Greek gig,
It's just kept going,
People heard, heard about the festival we just done, and said, oh good, they're still alive, they can still do stuff, and booked us for other festivals. So we bounced around the world doing festivals.
Yeah, and as we play the festivals, you bump into other bands back from the 80s that were doing the same thing. All of a sudden, people want to hear us again, and there seemed to be a bit of a demand. So it's a bit of a surprise probably for all our bands, really. And then we used to say, why isn't there any festivals like this in England? You know, it's dead in England, and there wasn't any. So I did my own British Steel Festival, so we do that now. And we have like 80s bands like us on. We've got one coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, could you tell us about, a bit more about the British Steel Festival? Which bands do you book?
Right, well, this one
if
coming
I know
up.
Who's still alive first?
This one coming up is Pagan Altar, Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper, us, a band called Saracen, who were around in the 80s and back again, and a band called Agincourt, who are a new wave of British heavy metal band, who sort of reformed recently. We had Demon, we've had Tigers of Pantang, Jaguar,
Handsome
Beasts,
Cloven Hoof,
Witchfind, Praying Mantis, that's on the third arm. Sort of bands like that, new wave of British heavy metal bands, really, British bands, because. We just want. I mean, so, because of the costs, you know, like, I don't know how these festivals do it, fly bands in and make money.
Zero.
We get a crowd of about 250 people, and out of that, 50 are perhaps English. We have a 200 are from Germany and Greece and everywhere else, so it's hard work to get anything going in England.
As well, because as years go on, there's not so many balance to play it, you know, just trying to keep it.
Yeah, we have a strict policy because obviously we sort of run it. We always insist on playing it because it's unfair. but we haven't really got any particular running order. Everyone gets the same length.
Yeah, we all have the same.
And nobody gets paid a fee as well.
We just share the profits between
all
us.
All the money that comes in, we have to hire the venue, pay the lighting guy, pay the sound guy, pay the bar
advertising
staff,
promotion,
advertise, do everything. The money that's left.
Yeah, but after that, we split the money equally
between the five bands.
Yeah. And we have one sort of back line, so there's not a band like forced, like with support bands. You see all the bands with their headline band with all their gear all over the stage, and they've got like 2 inches of space in front, you know. This is just one back line, and we share, we'll get the same stage space. So we try and make it as equal as possible.
It's been really good for other bands, though. They take the risk and come down to London to play their gig, knowing they're not probably going to cover their costs.
Yeah, like Hammerhead, they come for miles.
Yeah, people see them playing and then realise they're still alive and playing, and then
they get booked
gigs
for things, yeah,
around the world from that.
Yeah,
I see the new wave of British heavy metal scene is growing now these days.
You think so?
Yeah, it's more and more festivals. This Metal Merchants is pretty new. Yeah. It's just 3 years old.
Yeah.
And then we have Keep It True, the British Deal, and there are small festivals popping up all over Europe.
Nothing in England, though, really. Only us. To say, it's more so in Europe where it's still, well, more popular.
I think it's popular because at that time people were still writing songs. It wasn't particularly a type of how fast can I play a guitar riff and growl at people. It was more melodic music, but it was still heavy, and that still shows. And I think people do appreciate a good song as well as good musicianship.
But isn't it weird that the crib of heavy metal, as in England, Great Britain, that it's still so small there, but in Germany and the Nordic countries, it's big. Like in Greece.
It is really
surprising.
The trouble is in England, you've got a program called The X Factor. You know that? And the front pages of all the newspapers every day is Cheryl Cole this and Cheryl Cole that.
Yeah,
and Simon
same here.
And that, the main majority of people in England, just force-fed by the media, it's on the TV and the papers. Yeah, that's all they know. You know, probably 99% of the people just lap that up, and that's what they think music is, you know. But it's perhaps the 1% of people that want something different that go out and find rock. Although, from my experience of like the young kids now, they play computer games these days, they buy records, but you know, Guitar Hero and stuff like that. My two sons, they're like listening to Merciful Fate and stuff again now because they've heard King Diamond on the Metallica game and stuff like that, you know, and they've got into it. And sometimes they surprise me. We was playing in Italy with Diamond Head in November, and I said, oh, I'll have to go and get a Diamond Head album and listen to it because I don't really know him. And my son goes, oh, I've got one near, Dad. Like, oh, thanks, you know. So he's into other heavy metal bands and stuff like that and surprises me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
He bought me Accept's album for Christmas.
That's cool.
Yeah. Forsiktig nå.
Ja da, det alltid litt å gå på med den sensoren, skjønner du. Hæ? Sånn?
Ja, det var jo god.
Hva var det?
Med bilforsikring Super I Storebrand du forberedt på overraskelser. Storebrand? Oi, sant. Du beholder blant annet bonusen ved parkeringsskade. Storebrand. Invester I fremtiden.
Now these days you have been playing or this is maybe yesterday was the first day you played Son of Odin in its whole.
We've done it before in
you
Greece.
Did it before. Yeah.
We did it in Greece.
First because, time was in Greece, but
yeah, because you have given out more albums than Son of Odin. But now you're playing mostly songs from that album because of the anniversary.
Yes.
But how does it feel that people appreciate that album so much more than your newer releases?
It is strange. We're not quite sure why people have grown up with it and like it, and they feel happy and comfortable with it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good. We're very honoured that they do.
I mean, we think the new album is as good as anything we've done.
And in 25 years' time, people will like the new album. But
so we'll have to go around all over again and do that.
We're a small band, and we haven't got £2,000 to put big adverts in Classic Rock magazine in England, and we can't promote it on the radios and stuff. We haven't got that money to promote the album, so all we can do is sell it on our website, and slowly the trickle of albums goes out, and someone hopefully likes it and tells their friends, and they buy it, and the word is spread. It just takes a lot longer than a big band like Iron Maiden. Yeah, they put a new album out, and everyone knows it's out there, and they get it straight away.
I mean, it happens with every band. I mean, Deep Purple, people say Our Machine is their best album, but you know, Fireball's a great album. In Rock's a great album, you know, and Burn the Stormbringer are great albums, but so people have their own favourites. And with us, it's a safe bet. I mean, people haven't got that much cash to go around buying albums on spec, so everyone, you know, has heard of that one, so they'll go for that one first and make sure they like it.
But what's the difference between Elixir 1986, Elixir 2011? The difference between Son of All in Time and All Hallows Eve?
About 20 stone,
yeah.
And a lot less hair.
You're just as tough and just as fast.
I think we're a bit more accomplished players now. The dynamics were maybe first time around a bit all flat out, full out, you know. But now we can lift, you know, get the mood of the song. We're much better crafted at that.
I think
a songwriting is better, although some people would probably dispute that.
There's no pressure. Before, it was a case of, why can't we get signed up? Why can't we make,
We wanted a record deal and pack in their jobs and go professional. And that's what our goal was, main thing, you know.
If anything, I think we're a bit heavier now. Yeah.
These days, we just said, when we got back together, we'd just do it for fun. If we stopped and enjoyed it, we'll stop doing it. But we haven't stopped enjoying it, you know. When we get on stage, just turn up the volume and, and rock it out. It's great. Yeah. You know? It's just the enthusiasm's still there, the passion's still there.
I mean, in the last two albums, we've experimented a bit. We've dropped tune, you know, dropped the bottom A to D and stuff like that. So there's a different tunings, which we've never did before. So we've did a few songs doing that sort of thing, which is new for us.
Yeah,
and it turned out really well. We did some cracking songs out of that.
And the new album, we've done a 14 minutes, 15 seconds song, the epic, which we probably couldn't do when we were hiring a studio. It cost a fortune because it took time to put it together, but recording it ourselves, we could do that. So
I think we'd worry too much about what people would think of it if we did it, so we wouldn't do it. So now we write things that we like, and if we think it sounds good, and if we think the production sounds good, then hopefully the people we want to like it will like it.
So it's more confident. Yeah. You are more confident.
Less stressed, I think. More fun involved, you know. We hope everyone likes it, but you know.
As he knows, there's going to be an audience here this time. Man.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. But where do you get the inspiration from? As you still play old school metal, do you go back in the old archives with records, or do you just take things from your head?
It's all different. Some of it's worked on quite a lot. Like the long song, it took quite a lot of working on. Some of it just comes straight off the top of your head, and Nigel might be blasting away and doing the drums, and I just come in the riff, and I like the sound of that. We're on a roll, and within a couple of minutes, we've almost got a song. Sometimes it just happens like that.
There's a couple of songs in there, and we hadn't even played as a band when we were recording until afterwards, really, was it?
But the question was, what about inspiration from? I mean a couple of these boys listen to the more modern music, but I don't. I still listen. I've just got CDs instead of vinyl now, but I still listen to Black Sabbath most of the time, or Heaven and Hell, as they were.
You'd probably be horrified by my record collection.
Deep Purple, Thin Lizzy. I'm still listening to the old school rock, mostly.
I'm like, still catching up with
I like Black Country Communion. Do you know Black Country Communion?
No, I haven't.
It's Glenn Hughes from Deep Purple and Joe Bonamassa.
Jason Bonham.
Yeah. They've just done a new album, but it's like 70s old school rock, really, so I like it. But most of the time I'm listening to old albums still.
What about you? You said I would be frightened of your collection. Like I mean, you too?
No. I mean,
it's further back than that.
Captain Beyond, you heard Captain Beyond?
Some songs.
Yeah, I'll believe it. Yeah.
Iron Butterfly, is that
one? Iron Butterfly, Vanilla Fudge.
Late 60s rock bands.
Yeah, Blind Faith and Grud, you know, like that.
Mad old shit.
And so into, you know, folky stuff. John Martin and Nick Drake and stuff like that. Jim Morrison, The Doors, all that kind of stuff.
My peak time was probably 1980 was a good year. Michael Schenker Group first album. And Judas Priest, British Steel, those sort of albums were. That was the big influence on my playing and style, I think. And I still listen to that kind of stuff. Merciful Fate, first two albums, 1983 and 4 or whatever it was.
Five. It does show that we do listen or have listened to older stuff. Because when Phil came out with on the Mindcreeper album, there was the Iron Hawk track on that. Phil came out with the main riff for that and just said, well, that's a riff. Yeah, I probably won't do anything with it because it's gonna. The main part of the song is that riff. Mm. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. Budgie can get away with playing one riff for about 10 minutes on a song, and get away with it quite nicely. So we did that and made him do the song.
Yeah.
And it worked out brilliantly. I think.
One of my favourites.
But it wasn't going in much till Norm's come up with that chord verse part. When Norm's come up with a verse idea, it's quite an original sort of thing as well. And that's sort of like, oh, put it in a new direction. Then we carried on.
I mean, we know what we're good at. So if Phil comes up with a riff, he'll say, well, I've got this killer riff, it's a good introduction thing, I'm going to use it for a verse, but I need a chorus. Then one of us will try and chip in with a chorus for it. Or if we've got something, we say it's lacking something, we give it to Phil, and Phil will say, right, okay, we need to drop it at a section, put another little panel in.
I mean, personally, I like a lot of progressive, well, what they call my progressive metal. You know, I like Rush and Dream Theater and all that sort of stuff, which is a whole other side of plan, like, so.
I mean, when we started as well, our main early influences was the Merciful Fate albums, and Queensryche had just come out, their first albums, and that was like complicated technical time changes and things. Sort
probably
of
Queensryche and Merciful Fate were probably some of our biggest influences, really, in the early days. Really.
Yeah. Paul sort of smoothed out there where we put all the time changes. You know, did songs like Death Toll, which is like a great big long song with lots of changes, all smoothed us out and made the songs a bit more vocal friendly and
hopefully.
What are your future plans now after all these festivals and the new album will soon be an old album again? Are you going to write a new one, tour?
We're already working on some ideas for a new album, because we've got the recorder now. There's nothing holding us back, you know. I've been down my cabin the last few weeks putting a few riffs down to demo form, but we haven't started working on that until we've got a few festivals and gigs coming up till April, and then after that
so we'll see what comes in, if any other gigs come about.
In between time we'll start working on some new ideas for another album, but I fancy doing a whole concept album next time, a whole album. We'll see how it goes. If it works, works, then we'll go with it. If we get a few songs in and we think no, then
we'll see. But I mean, we're definitely working on more stuff. We're not going to give up now. It might take us a year or two, depending on what we have to do.
Depends what we have to do in between. Yeah. If we've got no gigs, then we'll get back to writing.
But as far as I'm concerned, as long as we're still alive, we might as well keep doing it. So, you know, you're a long time dead, so you might as well leave stuff behind that somebody hopefully will like.
That sounds really good. Now we have actually talked for over half an hour. So is it anything you'd like to add in the end?
Well, just really to thank all the fans that are out there for giving us such great welcomes.
Fans, promoters.
It's the first time we've been to all of us. We've never been to Norway before, so thanks to the people in Norway. Thanks to the audience.
Thanks to the
audience
last night. Heavy Merchants Festival.
The organisation of the festival has been really good, and we've been looked after really nicely. Everything on stage was good last night, and I really enjoyed it. And goes for the rest of the guys in Europe. You know, the fans are what make it. So if they still like it, we'll still make it.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
I just cross my fingers for this one to work now.
Save button.
Hold this on, please. Don't die.
Du har hørt et intervju med Elixir fra 2011. Og likte du det, kan du for eksempel høre episoden med Satan og Jaguar. Neste vecka vi forhåpentligvis fortsatt på gult nivå I Oslo. Jeg har nemlig planlagt et intervju med Hermod Falk fra Flux. Så hold hosten din unna folk, så får vi gjennomført det. Hvis du ikke gjør det allerede, abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Fortell alle du kjenner om podcasten og legg gjerne igjen en god anmeldelse der du hører. Vil du bidra med noen kroner for at jeg skal kunne fortsette, kan du gi støtte via Patreon eller Vips. Info I episodebeskrivelser. Husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook også for konkurranser, diskusjoner og musikktips. Akkurat nå kan du vinne skiva og merch fra både Dark Essence og Katakomben. Helle Steinkløv, det meg. Jeg kjører på med et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Høres!